Good morning. Do you notice the effect that the cooler weather's having on everyone? A lot more smiling and happiness today than has been during all these sweltering days. We've been studying about the lifestyle of the Christian, and now we're going to start studying about the worship of the Christian and how and why we do what we do. Worship is something that everybody does, but there's a lot of people that aren't even aware they're worshiping. Many in this country worship sports, or sports stars, or famous people, movie stars, and rich people, and multitudes during this season are sort of worshiping political power. It's amazing that archaeologists all through history dig up and looking at ancient civilizations, and they've never unearthed a civilization that didn't worship something. Sometimes they worship things that were a little weird, but they all worship something. You know, the Egyptians worshiped the sun and the moon and the stars. Ra, the sun god, was their main god, but they worshiped cows and alligators and all kinds of things that had to do with their daily life. You start digging in about as far back as you can go. In Chinese culture, you find that they worship flying snakes or dragons, and it's things like that all over. When Paul went to Athens and was going to preach to the Greeks, he was going through this park they call the Areopagus, and it was like a park that had representations of all their different gods. And he said, you know, I noticed you're very religious people. In fact, you got so many idols there, you even got one to the unknown god, because they made an extra one in case they forgot somebody. And Paul says, this unknown guy, that's the one I want to preach to you. So he began to preach Jesus to them. So the first question that will pop into our minds is, why? Why do men everywhere feel the need to worship? And of course, it's because God built that need into us. We were created to worship. And so there is this felt need to fill this empty spot within ourselves into worship. Frederick Robertson was a theologian way back in the 1800s in England, a lot more well-known then than now. But he wrote, it is not a thing which man can decide whether he will be a worshiper or not, but a worshiper he will be. The only question is what he will worship. Man is unique among all of God's creatures. You don't see a worshiping dog. You don't see a worshiping monkey. No other creature worships, only man. And we do it instinctively because God created us specifically to worship him. So we have this need. Everybody has things they read. We all like to read the scriptures, and I enjoy reading the scriptures, but I've got somewhere around 2,000 books left. I've given a lot of my library away. And I like to read a guy named A.W. Tozer. And Tozer preached all of his life. He died in 1963, but the last 30 years of his life, he was a preacher at one denominational church in Chicago. And he wrote 50 books of sermons, the compilations of his sermons, and more than 10 books on various subjects, and a bunch of booklets. And he gave almost all of the royalties from those books to the poor. He just signed them over when he wrote the book. And he wrote, we were created to worship. Worship is the normal employment of moral being. It is normal, not something stuck on or added like listening to a concert or admiring flowers. It is something built into human nature, and that is that we are worshiping beings. I suppose a logical thing as we start the series is define our terms. And so I want us to first look at the Webster's Dictionary definition of worship. And it just means to honor or to show reverence, to regard with great or extravagant respect, honor, and devotion. The Greek word that is often used in reference to worship, gonou, is fall to one's knees, to bow, prostrate self before, to humble. And that's the word that's used in Philippians chapter 2 when he talks about every knee will bow to him. In Ephesians chapter 3 when Paul says, for this reason I bow my knees before the Father. It is a way that one worships, and when one worships, he surrenders his will to the other person. So he bows before that person in an act of surrender. The word worship, proskune, is the closest English word to the word that we is worship. And it is from a word that means to kiss. And it's not talking about kissing somebody. It's the pagans had a way of worship. They would come and they would kiss the ground where the shadow of their idol fell and touch the ground, and they would bow down and kiss the ground. And so it was an act of bowing yourself completely down. It wasn't just bending your knee in a little curtsy. It was a bowing yourself down and touching your face to the ground. And so to worship by prostrating oneself before the God that they're worshiping. And that was what Moses said you shouldn't do to an idol. You know, in Exodus chapter 20, he said that we shall not worship them or serve them. And he's talking about the gods of the land. When Jesus said that God is a spirit and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. And that word worship there is the same word that we're talking about here. And it's an emotion that flows from the heart. It's an opening of your heart to God. And it motivates the surrender of one's will. And then there is the word serve, which means exactly what we use it to mean in regular terms. It's acts that are done for the deity that you want to worship. One who surrenders to a deity will also serve that deity. To worship and to serve are two different things. To worship, you're opening your heart to, and you're giving great respect that flows from your heart. But to serve means that you actually do things for that person. So when he talks about you shall not worship or serve them, he's being specific. He's saying you don't feel this emotion in your heart, and you don't do things to honor these false gods. In Deuteronomy, he says to walk in all his ways and love him and serve the Lord your God with all your heart and keep the Lord's commandments and his statutes. It's a part of the act of worshiping, part of the act of being devoted to serving is obeying the will of God. When Joshua was nearing his death, and he had his last sermon in giving his farewell address to the nation. And he's saying, now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. Notice he says their fathers served other gods when they were in Egypt, but it also says they served other gods beyond the river. Now, what he's talking about is while they were doing that 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, they weren't faithful to God. They were serving other gods. And he says, you can't keep on living like that. You have to make a choice. And he says in verse 15, if it is disagreeable in the Lord, choose for yourself today whom you will serve, whether you're to serve gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites, but as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. And so he says, I'm going to be having my life centered around doing things for God. And of course, that was his farewell address to them. And the prophetess Anna was in the temple grounds continually, and she was a widow. And so she could do things that she couldn't do if she was married, because she had responsibility to her husband as long as her husband was alive. But after her husband died, she devoted herself to serving God. And it says she never left the temple, serving night and day with fastings and prayers. And so part of serving God is doing religious acts in the honor of God. The actions one takes because of his surrendered heart is what service amounts to, and it's done to please and to glorify God. When we worship or serve God, he is looking at our heart. You remember in Matthew chapter 9, Jesus says, these people draw near to me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. He says, when someone is worshiping me, I'm not looking at the outside of what they're doing. When they're singing those songs, I don't care whether they can follow the tune. He says, make a joyful noise to the Lord. And the whole idea there is joyful. It is an expression of your heart. And so as we sing, God isn't listening to the words. Those words are communicating to each other. We teach and admonish one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. But God's looking at our heart, and he's looking at, why is he singing that song? Is he just trying to show off his pretty voice, or is he trying to master his grasp of following music or whatever? He says, what I'm looking for is that heart pouring out its devotion to me. In Psalm number 122, David said, and I was glad when they said, let us go into the house of the Lord. He said, let us go up. That's called a psalm of ascent. And Jerusalem was the highest place in the nation. From any direction, when you went to Jerusalem, you were going up. And there are 15 psalms in that section. And they're called psalms of ascent. It was songs, what we call psalms, sung on the way to Jerusalem to worship. And so they're an expression of the joy of being able to go into the house of the Lord. Secondly, worship is a theme that goes through the Bible from Genesis right through the book of the Revelation. From the garden, Adam and Eve fell when they stopped worshiping God. When they put themselves, what they wanted, above what God was instructing, then they were no longer humbling themselves before God. They were in rebellion. You know, I'm sure we don't have any of those in this congregation, but I have been in places where we had members who were just really righteous people on Sunday, but you didn't want to buy a car from them on Monday. Not talking about Butch. You know, Monday through Saturday, they were just like everybody else in the world. But Sunday, boy, they were, oh, how I love Jesus. Just like children. You know, you can tell whether a child really loves his parents. Because if a child really loves his parents, he's going to act the same way away from his parents as he does in front of his parents. Because he's living out of respect for his parents. But it's not just going to church. It's giving one's heart to God. And you follow all the way through different times. We don't have time to cover all the things that are there. But the book of Revelation culminates in all of God's people being together as a unit in heaven. With God, praising God and glorifying God and serving God. And so it is important that we worship. As we go through this series, we're going to see that there's a difference between worship and the assembly. We worship in this assembly, But this isn't the only worship that we do as a Christian. But it's really important that we be together and that we draw the strength from the group. You know, in Israel, Exodus chapter 23, God required all the males in the nation to gather in the capital in Jerusalem three times every year. Whatever you were doing, you dropped that and you went to Jerusalem and you had this period of worship. And it would be a week or more. And it was an ingathering. It was what they called a holy convocation. It meant that you came together for a specific spiritual purpose. And that's emphasized in Exodus, in Numbers, in Leviticus. We gain strength even today from gathering together. When you go out, the world is pulling you down all the time. But when you get together, it's a time when your brethren are building you up and you're sucking strength from each other. I don't know if you've ever been to a big assembly of Christians, but there's no experience like it, and I really recommend that everybody that can go out. You know, the church used to send me to Tulsa, Oklahoma once a year to a gathering of the soul-winning workshop. And I remember one year we had 15,000 there. And when that crowd began to sing, you could feel the vibration of the music in your body. And you left just floating on a cloud. You were so strengthened. You felt invincible because you couldn't remember a lot of what was said, a lot of what was done. It was the experience of being in that large gathering in which everyone had the same goal and everyone loved the Lord and everyone had this feeling. Today they use polishing the pulpit in East Tennessee for a lot of that kind of thing. But we need to follow the example of David. We've read Psalm 122. I think possibly half of you could quote it anytime, anywhere. I was glad when they said, we're going to the house of the Lord. David had, from a youngster, had taught himself to be open to the praise of God. It was his favorite pastime. It was his highest honor. It was his greatest joy. You know, David started writing Psalms when he was still a shepherd boy. And he continued writing Psalms right up until he was infirmed and couldn't get out of his bed. He had all those many years. You read a lot of those Psalms that were preserved for us. That's only a small fraction of what he wrote. But the majority of the Psalms in the book of the Psalms were written by David. And it was because he had trained his heart to be open to God, to express it and to receive it. But, you know, not all worship is acceptable. Sometimes we think that because it's enjoyable to us, that it's enjoyable to God. And we do things the way we think they ought to be done. But the story of Cain and Abel, you know, that was the first record of a worship service that we have in the Bible. And they came together, there was two of them, and they evidently had two different altars. And both are offering sacrifices to God. And half of those sacrifices that were offered were refused by God. He did not accept an offering of vegetables because without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sins. And so Abel offered an acceptable sacrifice and his worship was accepted. When Israel went out of the land of Egypt and began to form as a nation, and they built the tabernacle, and they started worship in the tabernacle, and they ordained priests. Moses' brother Aaron was the chief priest, and his sons were the second to the chief priest. And of course, there would have been many more. but those two were the predominant ones. And they found out that it's really important to reverence God. We get all excited if somebody was punished for using a red tip match instead of a blue tip match. And that's basically what it come down to. God said, I want you to get the fire from the altar of incense, and you come over and you light the thing. And they just brought fire from home. They used red tip matches instead of blue tip matches. And fire came out from the altar and killed them both, because God was saying, I will be respected. I told you what I wanted, and you did something different, and that isn't going to be. And so he started right off. Nadab and Abihu were destroyed for not reverencing God in their worship. That kind of an attitude spread to the entire nation at different times. The nation of Israel, in Isaiah chapter 1, he said, God, speaking through the prophet, said, bring your worthless offerings no longer. Incense is an abomination to me. Those are things he commanded. He says, new moon and Sabbath, the calling of assemblies, those are things he commanded. I cannot endure iniquity and the solemn assembly. I hate your new moon festivals and your appointed feast. They have become a burden to me, and I am weary of bearing them. And that was their worship. He said, I'm weary of bearing, of putting up with your worship. Because the worship was a form they went through. It wasn't coming from their heart. They did not come before God and lay their heart on the altar and give him glory. Malachi, last book in the Old Testament. Again, God speaking through the prophet said, you are presenting defiled food upon my altar. But you say, how have we defiled you? In what you say, the table of the Lord is despised. But when you present the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? When you present the lame and sick, is it not evil? You know, he said, I'm not going to take a second class offering. You'll remember Jesus taking the whip and cleaning out the place in the temple where they were selling lambs. The reason they were selling lambs is because they started a process by which they would inspect the offering and make sure that the offering had no defect on the outside. Then they would open that lamb and make sure that there was no defect on the inside either. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 1, we're told that we present our bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is our spiritual or reasonable service of worship. He said, we Christians present our heart to God in the same way they presented a lamb to God, or turtle doves, or whatever it was that they offered. He says, we're doing the same thing with our heart. We lay ourselves a living sacrifice on the altar. And we need to make sure it's one that is holy, so it will be one that's acceptable to God. Jesus made reference to these prophets. We've referred to the passage before, but he says, you hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. But in vain do you worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. And that can apply to the church today, as well as it did to the church that Jesus was addressing. Tozer, in his book about worship, said, worship is the missing jewel in modern Christianity. We have lost the concept of coming and just laying our heart before God. We go through rituals, which are fine. We're doing things that we're supposed to do. But unless we're pouring our heart into those things, then they are not acceptable to God. Worship is a forgotten virtue in today's society. Remember, the chief end of man is to glorify God and to enjoy God eternally. Too often, we just entertain each other. Now, I have nothing against entertainment, and I really have my favorite songs. And sometimes I really want someone will sing my favorite song just because I'm wanting to hear it. Sometimes I'm down and I need it to pick me up. And that's not to say that we shouldn't have something that relates to the sermon, because we're trying to get our minds focused on a certain path that we're going down. Worship is a giving experience, though. It's not something that we do expecting return. It's something that we give, that we lay out to God. It's an opening of our heart before God. Worship is to unashamedly to acknowledge God for what He is. God is the creator. He is the sovereign ruler of all. He's the King of kings, the Lord of lords. He's the one that's everywhere present, and He's the one that we bow ourselves to. And so we need to be training our heart in the same way that David trained his heart, to be able to just open up and to have our heart become one with God. There are very few examples of worship in the New Testament, but there are two examples of worship that stand out to me as true worship. One is when the Lord appears and He's talking with Thomas, and Thomas looks at Him and Jesus says, "Put your hand in my side, put your finger in my wrist here in the hole of my hand." And Thomas was just in awe. He says, "My Lord and my God." And that was true worship. He was expressing his heart to God. Another one is in Revelation chapter 1, verse 17, when the apostle John is confronted with a vision of Jesus. And he says, "And when I saw him, I fell at his feet like a dead man. And he placed his hand on me, saying, 'Do not be afraid. I'm the first and the last and the living one. I was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. I have the keys of death and Hades.'" He says, when I saw the glory, because that's after Jesus had been ascended to heaven. He had been glorified. So worship is not something we do to receive a benefit, but we do benefit from worship. We have a deeply felt need satisfied when we come together. When we worship God, it engenders within us the contrition for our sins. We are so regretful that we're not like God, and that we're not what we want to be. It strengthens our allegiance to God, and as we're drawn closer to God, it separates us from the darkness of the culture around us. Worship binds us to God, and as we're bound to God, we're bound to each other in Christ. Worship creates within us the desire to be like God and the desire for other people to be like God, to love God, and to be drawn to God. And so our whole lesson is worship is something that is a very deeply personal thing that flows from your heart to God's heart. You know, the devil wants us to worship him. When the devil was tempting Jesus in the wilderness, and he comes out of the wilderness, and the devil says to Jesus, he says that he's been put in charge of everything and he can give it to anybody he wants to. And he says, "Therefore, if you worship me," that's Satan speaking, "it shall all be yours." Jesus answered him, "It is written, 'You shall worship the Lord your God and serve Him only. So worship is a heart-to-heart experience with God, and it's an experience that I pray that each one of us will enjoy every day. We don't just worship when we come together in this building. We worship God every day, and we'll see as we progress with the other lessons that we worship God in many ways and in many places. If you're not a follower of Christ, if you're not one who has surrendered your life to Him, then you have no foundation to worship Him. And that's a really sad circumstance to be in. And so we would like to offer you the opportunity to be able to be a part of Christ, to join and become part of His body. Express your faith that He is the Son of God that was dead, but now is alive and will be alive forevermore. We express that faith with words, but we express that faith with actions as well. And one of the first actions that we take is by burying that old man of sin in the water of baptism, and then being resurrected, a new creature, born again into the body of Christ. If there's any way that we can serve you in your obedience to Christ, we invite you to come forward while we stand and as we sing.